This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another special guest series here on the Authentic Persuasion Show. My name again is Jason Cutter. So glad that you're here. My mission is to help fill the world with authentic persuaders. And this show is a part of that as your guide to helping you, sales professionals, leaders, team members, close more sales, make more money, and do it in a way that is authentic for you. And these conversations hopefully bring value to that. I'm so glad you're here. If you're tuning into this, if you're watching, if you're listening to the podcast, there is a reason, and this is going to be a great one. My special guest today, I have Greg Accardo from Louisiana State University's Professional Sales Institute. Now, Greg comes at his role at the school with 25 years of sales and business experience. He is the inaugural director of the LSU Professional Sales Institute, bringing his experience and expertise from the sales world to marketing majors, to people getting into the sales courses. And it's so interesting. He has won multiple awards, including for his teaching role and then also in competitions. His team actually placed first in role play national champions in 2020 at the International Collegiate Sales Competition, which not too long ago, I didn't even know that was a thing. So it's a fascinating world. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all things sales related. Greg, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you, Jason. Glad to be here.
So very excited for this because, again, you are the inaugural director of this program, coming at it with a whole bunch of experience and starting this program. Let's talk a little bit, because this first segment is about authenticity. Talk a little bit about your kind of evolution through sales, where you started, you know, a while ago, and then what that looked like rolling into the education season of your life.
So it's a great question. And like a lot of people, I probably ended up in sales almost by accident. Let me kind of explain what I mean by that. When I graduated in my undergraduate degree back in the early 90s, my big ambitions and plans were to go to law school. Everybody wants to be a lawyer, right? So let's go to law school. It's where you can make the money. And it just so happens why I was actually waiting to get accepted to law school, I was approached about a full-time sales career in insurance and never even thought about being in sales. And because I was a newlywed, my wife, you know, spent a few years, our first years of marriage, with me going to school, working full-time, and it was a disruptive lifestyle. And we were fixing to look at three more years of that. I don't think she was looking forward to it that much. And she said, why don't you just take the job and just see what happens? Because I need a break of you going to school and us, you know, really not having a life. So I said, fine, I'll do that and see what happens. Well, I ended up, I really liked it. I had a great mentor and teacher, had a lot of success. It was a lot of work, but I had some success and kind of got me started back in the middle 90s in a sales role. Really big, became a fan of Zig Ziglar and, you know, followed him around, listened to, I would listen to his cassette tapes in my truck while I was going to appointments. And, you know, I was like, this is fascinating. You talk about, you know, authenticity and persuasion, man, this guy was a genius. You know, he was way ahead of his time. And so, you know, just started, you know, fine tuning that sales craft and, you know, few years later, went off in another business venture, being self-employed, doing real estate investments, and, you know, sold those investments and ended up doing consulting work as a business development rep for companies. And lo and behold, I was working for the local airport here in the city of Baton Rouge doing sales for them and ended up running into, by accident, because it was a sales role that I was doing, the MBA program at LSU had an ad in the airport that the contract was expired and I had to renew the contract and reached out to the director of the MBA program here at the LSU College of Business. And at the time, the man didn't even know there was an ad at the airport for the MBA program. And he said, well, that's new. I didn't know we had an ad. He said, I need to come see it. Okay. So we made an appointment. He came out. I showed him the ad and I you know, reminded him that, you know, we need to renew the contract, but the ad was old and need to be renewed and need to be updated, and also sold him some additional spaces for ads. Thought that, you know, we're some more opportunities here. And he brought up, he said, you know, you should join our professional MBA program. We have a program that is structured and geared for working professionals like you that can come in and take the MBA classes at night. It was a 24-month program. And my first comment was, you know, that I was a horrible undergraduate student. Why would you want me in a master's program at LSU? Yeah, we laughed about that, but he said, no, you know, people like you have skills and some knowledge that you can contribute. You're working, you're being a cohort of other working professionals. And he said, you'd be a great fit. So I did. I joined it. I said, what the hell? Let's do it. Did the program, came out of the program. And when I came out in 2014, LSU was advertising for this new position, director of the LSU Professional Sales Institute. I'm like, I don't even know what that is. I said, but you know what? I'm a little bit bored. Let me send them a resume just to see if it's just to find out. Well, I got a call and I said, can you come in for an interview? And I said, yeah, sure. Let's, you know, I'll come in and interview with a panel of other faculty. This was a new, you know, a new program. You know, LSU never had a sales program in their College of Business, and they needed someone to be the director, to not only help grow the program, bring in corporate involvement, but also teach some sales classes. I'd never taught before in my life, but went through a interview process and ended up getting offered the job. And I still remember it was December of 2014. They say, hey, we want you to be the first director of this program. And I accepted. And so 9 years later, here I'm sitting, and, you know, with looking back from that time, I think we've probably graduated over 1,000 wow. LSU business majors with the sales concentration from this program. I can think back of all the students that I've mentored and interacted with, and the ones who are out having great success, professional sales careers are all over the country. So it's been quite a ride. It's going by really fast.
That's amazing. So I want to talk about the sales part for you and that. But since you brought this up, what was it like as the inaugural director of this program? Did they have anything? Were they blank slate? Here you go, Greg. Good luck and make this successful. What did you walk into, and what was your mandate?
I walked into a blank slate, okay, and because there was no playbook. There were some goals that needed to be obtained pretty soon, right, to make this program viable, but there really was no playbook on how to do that. I had to create the playbook, and I mentioned to some other friends and acquaintances, like, this is like being part of a startup, mm-hmm. right? You're basically just, you know, tighten your belt, lock down everything, and just get to work and see what happens. You make a lot of mistakes. You make some success. You try some things. They don't work. You come back. You redesign it. Try it again. The education part was already established. There was already the classes were in place. But what was not established was the operation of the department, creating the processes and procedures in a university environment. And if you know anything about higher ed, it's like a big bureaucracy where you've got guidelines and regulations on a lot of things that you do. Almost everything you do is governed by the university. But beyond that, you still have to achieve some measurable success that you can go back and talk to your stakeholders and attract more students. And you know, it's just one of those things where you get up every day, you put on your clothes, you go to work, and you just give it 100% and see what works. And if it doesn't, try something else.
Well, I absolutely love that. And I love the thinking about what you said, where you have over 1,000 graduates that are graduating with this sales concentration, having gone through these courses, at least at some level, and just those seeds that are planted and going out there in the world, especially in the world of sales, and hopefully guiding people in a different direction where they see sales as something different, which leads me into what I'm curious about. So you mentioned the Otto University, the Windshield University, the tapes of Zig Ziglar, and been there myself, and I know what that's like, and listening to those early on. What was it like, and/or what did you think of sales when you first got into sales in the beginning, and then, you know, what did you get from, let's say, the Zig Ziglars of the world, and how did that shape either what to do different in sales, or, you know, confirm what you were doing?
So that's another great question. I would attribute the limited Zig Ziglar education that I had way back in the 90s to the perception that I came to in sales, that this is a profession. Okay. And it's a profession. You have to treat it that way, where you have to perfect your craft. Your learning never stops. Okay. You're as much seniority that you have in this world of professional selling. When you stop learning, you stop becoming great at what you do. And that was one of the things that Zig Ziglar really preached continuously, that you got to continually learn and get better and practice. And that sunk in really quick. My mentors that I had in the business world that I just entered in the insurance business had some really great insights on how to deal with things like adversity and rejection, because adversity and rejection are the things that really wash out a lot of salespeople. When you look at the turnover rate for new sales positions, it could be as high as 70%. And a lot of that is some people are just not mentally prepared, or they're not built for the adversity that you have to encounter and deal with as you're on that road to success in sales. Preparation is a big requirement for you to understand that most of the time, not every time, but most of the time, the adversity and rejection you get in sales is not personal.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a business decision someone makes, that you are just not a good fit for us at this time. It may come off differently. Okay. You may, the verbiage may come out different, but it translates into, interesting, not a great fit for us at this time. Let's look at it later. But you may hear something different because they say something a little bit, the tone may be different, and people react to it because then the emotional part of that becomes, okay, this is a tough job and I don't like to be rejected. But the Zig Ziglars of the world, and I won't pick on him specifically, but he is really good at this, is that he would preach that, look, rejection is not the end of the world. It's just that you are not a good fit. It's not personal at this time. It may be later, but right now it's just not a good time. We need to move on to the next prospect.
So what about this, though? And you know this from being a professional educator and part of this program now for so long, is where is that balance where it is personal? Because I agree with you, and I say this all the time, it's not personal, it's business, but it's also not business, it's personal, which is, where is it the fact that I didn't do a good job as a salesperson leading to that rejection, right? Yes, there's times where it's not a good fit or they don't have the money, but what about that balance with, wait, maybe it's me, maybe I didn't do enough, maybe I could have done more. Like, where do you see that, or where did you address that in your career and, or maybe with your students, as far as like rejection's tough, but at what point is it also you, if we watch the game footage?
So, you know, one of the things, and instead of going back to my early career, I'll touch on what I'm teaching my students as they're preparing and they're getting ready for business careers, and specifically in professional sales, is that, you know, you're going to be going into a world that people are going to treat you differently than they did in the academic setting. You know, when you're in a university setting, it's a sterile environment. There's very little of adversity that you're going to encounter within this environment, other than just your academic requirements, making the grades and getting out of school. But when you go into the business world, there's different accountabilities. People are going to talk to you different. They're going to treat you a little differently. And that you have to prepare yourself for this new reality. And you have to have some skills and a little bit of of awareness that because you're in a different environment, the reactions to people to your actions are going to be sometimes different. Maybe you're not accustomed to. And if someone does reject you, your approach in sales, the first thing you should realize is that it is not personal. Again, it goes back to the point. The timing is not right. The product is not right. Something about your proposal, your offering just doesn't fit or feel right for them. Maybe let's look at it later. Okay. That can come off differently. But my job is to prepare students for this reality. And what I try to teach them is focus on the things you can learn from that. Focus on the things that make you better at what you do because of the adversity you had to go through to get to that sale. All right. Because you can always go back and think about what could I have done different? If I could do this all over again, if I could turn the clock back another day or another week and start over again and go to approach that prospect a different way than I did before, what would I be doing different? Knowing what you know now. And that accumulation of just that reviewing yourself and self-analyzing comes some expertise down the road. It's not a sprint. I'm going to tell you that it's a marathon, and it's a little bit every day. Okay. But it takes that tenacity to always look for how can I make myself better, a better listener, a better questioner, maybe learning a little bit more about the customer. And my hope is that when they leave here, they've got those skills and that's how they approach their new careers. Because guess what? The adversity may come day one. They may sit down and have to call 50 people the first week on the job and every one of them tell them no. Okay, that's a tough position to be in that, man, did I really want to go into sales? this is a tough job. But I'm trying to have them have a different perspective. Look at it differently, not with rose-colored glasses, but look at yourself. What can I be doing different? Do I need to change my tone? Is my approach off? Is a few things that maybe I need to listen to my trainers and my mentors more?
With everything that you learned in your sales career about authenticity, where is that you're bringing it to the students? And then how are they reacting to it? Especially because I know enough now of what, you know, college students going into a sales class are maybe thinking about sales or not sure about sales, but where does that conversation come up and how do you impact that upon them?
So we do a lot with technology in our program, and the technology is great. Okay. But we compare this to a mechanic working on a car. Okay, say a mechanic is doing a brake job on a car. A mechanic has a set of tools. As a sales rep, we're providing you a set of tools to go and execute in a workflow, whether it's CRM, whether it's AI, you know, email, video emails. You know, we build this little tool stack and we show them how to deploy those tools. But in the end, they have to have confidence in themselves. Okay, because at some point the tools are great. Okay, and you may get people engaged and you may have someone rag, but at some point in this journey you're on with this customer or prospect, maybe they're not a customer yet, you're going to have a human element. You're going to have to interact with these people. And when that opportunity opens and you get to humanly interact with them, whether virtually or in person, they're going to respect the authenticity more than if you're just trying to put on this fake persona. So I try to advise them is don't try to overdo it. Keep it simple. And because if you start overdoing it, making it complicated, you're going to make mistakes. It's just the law of nature. And you'll make fewer mistakes. The dial it down, keep it simple, and just be authentic. And people will sense it and they'll respect it more.
When you say keep it simple, that might be more for part two in the sales process. But what do people normally do, or what do you see the students or salespeople do that is not simple?
Well, first thing of all, is they try to overcompensate for any perceived weaknesses that they may have. And that overcompensation could be they're trying to overtalk their prospect. they're, you know, we call that, you know, dumping features. your brain gets disconnected from your mouth, and your brain looks for a comfort zone, and the comfort zone is just to burp up all the features you memorized before you went into the meeting, which is the thing you don't want to do. So I kind of equate that to being, you know, pushed off your bicycle. If you're riding your bike down the road and they push you off your bike, can you get back on the bike and just keep riding it, or you just stay in the ditch? And a lot of people get knocked off the bike and they can't get back on it. They're in the ditch. And that's just a lack of confidence, that lack of self-awareness. So it takes training. We try to work with them, and we do a lot of role plays. We put them in uncomfortable situations, not only role playing, but also live selling projects where they're selling, you know, live to people, making calls, making appointments, but get them experience a little bit of adversity. And then the more mistakes they make, okay, the more coaching we can give them here. And that's why I tell them, don't worry about the mistakes you're making. You're going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. What you want to make sure you do is you learn from those mistakes. We'll review what you did. We'll go over it and see, maybe you could have tried a different way. But hopefully, my goal is that they don't make those same mistakes when they leave me and go to work for the companies out there that are hiring them. I want them to make the mistakes here. We can go through it. We can go over it again. We can make sure you never do it again. And then when they show up at a company's doorstep as a new graduate ready to come on board as a new sales hire, that hopefully they've left all the early mistakes stages back with me. They're coming into, they've already done that. They've hit their thumb with that hammer. They know it hurts. They're going to go into it now and with a different perspective and be more authentic, be, you know, keeping it simple. And just
one last question for this part: what do you see and think that buyers want more of from salespeople now? And or how would that compare to when you first started in sales?
Yeah, buyers are, you know, you talk about the changing world of sales. Well, you know, what's changing more than the world of selling is the buyer's journey is changing. And technology has a big part of that. You know, my good friend and colleague at UT Dallas, Dr. Howard Dover, just came out with a book recently called The Sales Innovation Paradox. And he compares this to the classic sales machine and the modern sales machine. And, you know, a lot of us are still stuck in the classic machine from the selling perspective. The problem is the buyers left the classic machine a long time ago. They've already moved on to the modern machine. And you still have a lot of sellers still stuck in that classic model. Okay. And they're putting the new tires on the classic model, the new radios, you know, all the new technology, but it's still a classic machine. It's still a 55 Chevrolet. Okay. And your buyers are driving the Teslas. Okay. So there's a big disconnect there. And because they've moved on to a more classic approach to buying, the goal for the sellers is that to adapt to that process. And a lot of sales professionals haven't done that yet, or they're struggling to make that leap into how can we more mirror our selling process that mirrors the buyer's journey. So the buyers are looking for sales reps, getting back to your original question, who understand their process, who not trying to overthink it, keep it simple. You know, yeah, we used to buy that way years ago. We're not there anymore. We've moved on to 2.0 or 4.0. And that 4.0 modern sales method or modern buying method, a lot of times doesn't align very well with your classic selling model.
It's so true. And I love that analogy. I'm just imagining someone who's trying to buy the latest electric vehicle, let's say a Tesla, and then somebody's still trying to soup up and fix that 55 Chevy and add new features to it to sell it to that buyer, which there's a buyer for that, but it's not the buyers you might be going for because they want something different. And you're not appealing to what people want, especially if that's what you're selling. So I think that's a great place for us to pause and segue, because we'll talk about that more in the second part on persuasion and sales process. For people tuning in, I know if they want to connect with you, which is how we connected, I connect with a lot of people this way on LinkedIn, so they can find you, Greg Accardo, also LSU, and the both of these links will be in the show notes, but LSU's program for business and marketing, if people Google it or go in the show notes. Greg, thank you for being on this part one and sharing all this info and helping us with the authenticity piece of sales and sales program. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And super excited for part two. Like I said, we're going to continue the conversation, talk about persuasion. And I appreciate everyone tuning in and being a part of this journey, especially with what Greg was talking about and what buyers want and what buyers are looking for and how sales has shifted and all of that involved, hopefully changing sales from a dirty word that some people think about into what it actually is, as a profession of helping people get to a better place. So until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.